Sadducees. And so most of the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, was made up of Sadducees. They played a very large role in that group. So then you have down in verse 5. Look down in verse 5 where, depending on what translation you have, you get down to verse 5 and you have some individuals who are introduced, and these are people who are a part of the council. If you look over in verse 15, when they had commanded them to go outside of the council. Now, some translations, not many, some translations do put the word Sanhedrin there in verse 15, but most translations just say the council in verse 15. That word, the Greek word there, is the word Sanhedrin. So whenever you're reading, most of the time when you're reading in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Acts, and you read about the council, that's talking about the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin was the Jewish high court. There were 70 men who sat on this, who were members of this Jewish high court. And then you had the vice president, like our vice president. He wasn't the vice president, but you know, in our Senate, we've got 100 men, and in case of a tiebreaker, you've got the vice president who acts as the 101st vote. Well, that was the high priest for the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin had 70 men, and it also had the high priest. So sometimes you'll read that Sanhedrin had 70 men. Sometimes you'll read that it had 71 men, and that's what the difference was. It's just talking about the high priest. Look at verse 5, where you're introduced to the rulers. Those were simply priests, but they were some priests who were a part of this Sanhedrin. You're introduced to the scribes. They came along with the rulers. These are the scholars, or at least, let's say, they are perceived to be the scholars among the Jews, the people who interpreted the law. And most of them were Pharisees, not all of them. Most of them were Pharisees. And then you've got the men who are described as the elders. And that's not what we think of in the church as elders. These were simply some of the family heads, some of the nobles from the secular world. But all of those different, those three groups, the chief priests, sometimes called the rulers, the scribes, and the elders, those were the groups that made up the Sanhedrin. So when you get to verse 5 of Acts chapter 4, it's talking about this Jewish council. And what did they do in verse 5? On the next day, this Jewish council, rulers, elders, and scribes, as well as Annas the high priest, Caiaphas, John, and Alexander, as many as were of the family of the high priest, they were gathered together at Jerusalem. They came and brought Peter and John, and they set them in the midst of them. When the Sanhedrin came to court, they usually sat in some semi-circles. And so what they did is they put Peter and John right in the snake pit. They put them, not literally, but they put them right in the middle of this court system with all of the 71 judges staring at them. Now, when you get to verse 5 and 6, and it talks about the high priest, this can sometimes be confusing. Because in Acts chapter 4 and verse 5, who is called the high priest? Rulers, elders, scribes, as well as who? Who's the high priest according to Acts 4? Verse 5. Annas. Annas here is called the high priest. Since Luke wrote the book of Acts, go back to the beginning of Luke. Go to Luke chapter 3 and verse 2. And here's a verse that'll strike you weird. Luke chapter 3 and verse 2. While Annas and Caiaphas were what? While they were high priests. Well, I thought you only had one high priest at a time. What was interesting about the history that's going on at this time, the Jews, under Roman rule, the Jews were not selecting their own high priests. The Romans were appointing their high priests for them. And so, as you have on your handout, there was a period of about 9 or 10 years. Actually, I thought it was 11, but your handout says 6 to 15. That can't be 11. I thought it was 11 years. But Annas served as the high priest in the early part of that first century. But then about 15 AD, the governor before Pilate, You know, Pilate was the Roman governor, the guy who was the governor before him. He ousted Annas as the high priest and he put Caiaphas in. Well, the Jews had just gotten used to Annas. They liked Annas, or at least they had accepted Annas as the high priest. And now the Romans want to do away with Annas and they want them to follow Caiaphas. Well, most of the Jews still looked at Annas as the high priest. Well, who did the Romans look at as the high priest? They looked at Caiaphas as the high priest. So who was the high priest? Well, it depended on who you asked. Caiaphas was the legal one. Jason? Both Jews. They are Jews, but the Romans appointed which man would be the high priest. But good question. They were Jews, and most of the time they were Sadducees. The Sadducees, again, were kind of the aristocrats of the group. But do you remember, and we won't take time to go back and look at it, but do you remember when Jesus was arrested? Who did they take Jesus to first? Who was the first one that they took Jesus to? Do you remember? I think it was Annas. I haven't looked this up today, but I believe it was Annas. But what authority did Annas have? Nothing. I mean, to the Jews, he was the high priest. But if they wanted to get anywhere with the Romans, if they wanted to get anywhere in the trial and execution of Jesus, they had to go to Caiaphas. And so when you read about the betrayal of Jesus that night and the trials that he underwent, and you see him before Annas, and then you see him before Caiaphas, and then Pilate, and then Herod, and then Pilate again, and all that back and forth, try to keep in mind what was happening back then. Annas and Caiaphas were related. Caiaphas was his son-in-law. But whenever you're reading, if you read Annas was the high priest or Caiaphas was the high priest, it's okay. They were both high priests. It just depended on who you asked and who you wanted information from, I guess. Now, we're going to try to do some quick looking at this. Peter and John are arrested. Why were they arrested? Preaching Christ. Look at verse 1. As they spoke, Peter and John, to the people, the priests, the captain of the temple. So this guy would be armed if he's the captain, if he's the chief of police. The Sadducees came upon them. That doesn't sound very pleasing, does it? Being greatly disturbed that they, Peter and John, taught, present tense, they kept on teaching the people. These guys wouldn't shut up. They were greatly disturbed because Peter and John kept on teaching the people and preaching, present tense, over and over, preaching in Jesus the resurrection from the dead. Well, that's not good. You want to know what ticked the Sadducees off? That's not a good word, but that'll wake you up for a second. You know what made the Sadducees upset? This idea of the resurrection. If they would just shut up about the resurrection, everything would be all right. You know what made the Pharisees upset? They kept talking about Jesus being the authority. Who did the Pharisees think was, who did the Pharisees consider as the most important? It was them. Well, it's creating all sorts of issues for them. They laid hands on them in verse 3, put them in custody until the next day. And so as we read about Peter and John being arrested, why were they put in custody until the next day, the end of verse 3? Because it was evening time. It was illegal, according to their Jewish law, to have a trial at night. So they weren't going to break the law. They put them in custody, and they'll have the trial tomorrow. What does that tell you about the trials of Jesus? They're illegal. They broke their own laws in order to try to get rid of Jesus. Think about how desperate these individuals were in breaking their own laws. Sometimes it's referred to as a kangaroo court. Here are some individuals who gave up all form of order and decency and law in order to kill the Son of God. What kind of witnesses did they seek in the trial of Jesus? What kind of witnesses were they looking for? False witnesses. Well, that sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? They weren't looking for true witnesses. They were looking for false witnesses. And the trouble they had was trying to find two liars who would agree with each other. Because you got to, at their own law, which they were apparently following, you got to have two or three witnesses to testify alike, but sometimes it's hard to get liars to agree on anything. So the Sanhedrin arrested Peter and John because they didn't like what they were doing. What's the first word you have in verse 4? What do you got in verse 4? The word but? Or however? A word of contrast. Verse 3 doesn't look so good. Two apostles just got arrested because they were preaching. Verse 4 contrasts that and says, but let me give you a different piece of information. The apostles were arrested, thrown in prison because they were preaching Jesus. Looks bad, but however, what happened? The word of God was spreading. And people were believing it and obeying it to the point that the church was growing. And you start with 3,000 in Acts chapter 2. And the number of men came to be about 5,000 at the end of verse 4. And so if you count women in there, I have yet to be to a congregation that's got more men than women. I know they exist. I've just never been to one. Yes, ma'am. In Jerusalem, about that time, the population was probably 50 to 60,000. Now, during feast times and all of that, it fluctuated. But this is the feast time has passed. For the most part, most of the individuals who were in Jerusalem for the feast have already gone home. Perhaps some of them had stayed, but the general population was 50 to 60,000. So here we are, 5,000 men. So you're probably over 10,000 Christians in a matter of days. That's pretty impressive.
One fifth of the population.
Now. Why was that? Can you get anything to grow if you don't plant any seeds? How often were they planting the seed? What did we learn in Acts chapter 2? Daily in the temple and from house to house. They were busy teaching and preaching. So much so that that's why they got arrested, because these people would not stop teaching and preaching about Jesus. On the back of your sheet, just a couple points on the back of your sheet. Did I already have this up here? Did y'all see this? Good. You just saw it. On the back of your sheet, it's interesting that even in the midst of persecution, there weren't any blanks to fill in there, Nicole. It was all filled in already. Even in the midst of persecution, the church was growing. Now, it's an interesting discussion to ask this question. Was the church growing in spite of the persecution, or was the church growing because of the persecution? And our first answer would be, well, in spite of. I mean, of course, you know, the church is going to start being persecuted now, and now they're going to start throwing them into prison and putting them on trial, but the church is still able to grow. Or was there any growth that came about because of that persecution? We're in chapter 4. We're going to get to chapter 5, it talks about the church growing. We're going to get to chapter 6, it talks about the church growing. We're going to get to chapter 7. Who's put to death in chapter 7? Remember Stephen? Stoned to death? In chapter 8, the disciples are scattered. They are sent out of Jerusalem and they're scattered and they go preaching everywhere. And in chapter 8, we read about the church continuing to grow. If the Sanhedrin thought that persecuting or arresting and imprisoning preachers was going to stop the growth of the church, how'd that work out for them? It backfired, if anything. It was just the opposite of what they were going for. And so here it is, even in the midst of, or maybe even in spite, maybe because of this this persecution, the church is still growing. Now, come back to the front of your sheet, I think, right? Peter and John, verse 7. Peter and John stand before the Sanhedrin. Would you have been nervous? You got 71 guys, at the very least anyway. There could have been a crowd gathered as well. Because look down in verse 5. Verse 5 says, you've got the rulers, the elders, and the scribes. That's the Sanhedrin council, those 70, 71 people. As well as Annas the high priest, Caiaphas, John and Alexander, those are probably members of the Sanhedrin, and as many as were of the family of the high priest were gathered together at Jerusalem. This is going to be a show. They gave their family members tickets to the show. Hey, you got to come and see this. We got a couple renegades who've come, and we're gonna put them on trial. By the way, what was there a charge when they were arrested? Apparently not, because when they sat them in the midst of them in verse 7, they asked, by what power or by what name have you done this? What was the charge? They weren't. Apparently, there's no charge here, and they asked this vague question. What is the this, by the way? By what power have you done this? If you were a smart aleck teenager, just to try to imagine, if you were a smart aleck teenager, by what power have you done this? What would you have said?
Done what?
You know, so is that what Peter and John said? Done what? What are you talking about? I don't know what you're saying. This? That's general. That's vague. By what power have you done this? If Peter and John were scared, if they were embarrassed, if they were concerned for their own life, was this an opportunity to maybe try to wiggle out of it? They didn't. Then Peter, verse 8, filled with the Holy Spirit, said to them, rulers of the people and elders of Israel, that's all you big guys looking at me, if we this day are judged for a good deed done to a helpless man, by what means he has been made well, let it be known to you all and to all the people of Israel that by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, by him this man stands here before you whole. Did he pull any punches? No. You want to know how this man is standing here? Well, first of all, you need to understand he's standing here not because of our own goodness or our own power. He's standing here by the authority, by the power of Christ. They asked him, who gave you this power? Who gave you this authority? Who gave you this right? He just answered them, Jesus Christ of Nazareth. You remember the guy you crucified? Yeah, it's that one. And you not only crucified him, look at verse 11. You were so dumb that when the cornerstone was right there in front of you, you rejected it. This is the stone. Obviously a quotation from the Old Testament, Psalm 118. This is the stone which was rejected by you builders. Well, what does that mean? Was it hopeless when the man rejected it? No. He has become the chief cornerstone. Guys, he was staring you right in the face and you rejected him. But now he has become the chief cornerstone. And then in verse 12, nor is there salvation in any other, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. Verses 10, 11, and 12, Peter basically gave it to him. And he said, if you want to know how all of this has come about, it has come about by the authority of Christ. It's come about by the one that you were dumb enough to reject, and now he's the chief cornerstone. And it's come about by the one and only one who can save you. As you look at these verses, you see again, flip over to the back of your sheet. You all got these blanks, authority, cornerstone, only. Flip over to the back of your sheet. Roman numeral number 2, letter B. There continues to be an emphasis on the authority of Christ. We have mentioned this in the last several lessons, and only because it keeps appearing in the text. There continues to be an emphasis on the authority of Christ. They did not take credit for this activity. They did not say that it was anything that they had done. In fact, look over in verse 16. Here's an interesting statement. When the Sanhedrin is talking in verse 16, what shall we do to these men? For indeed that a notable miracle has been done through them is evident. There is a miracle that has been done, and it has been done through them. Now, jump over to verse 30. In verse 30, in a prayer that they're praying to God, they're praying that God will continue to be with them to stretch out His hand to heal, and that signs and wonders may be done through the name of your holy servant Jesus. There again is an emphasis on the name, the power, the authority of Christ. The Sanhedrin recognized in verse 16, there's no way these guys did it on their own. This was done through them. There had to be some other source that was doing it. Well, they identify it in verse 30 and in verse 10. That has been done through Christ, through His authority. But verse 12, if you want to memorize a verse from Acts chapter 4, make it verse 12. If you don't catch anything else tonight about this study, then catch what God says in verse 12. Peter is preaching to them about the Christ that they rejected, that they crucified, that God raised from the dead, this one that they thought was worthy of an illegal trial, breaking their own laws, was worthy of finding false witnesses just to condemn this guy, was worthy of not just punishing or banishing or even telling Jesus, stop preaching, but was worthy of hanging him on a cross. And now here's what Peter says to him. Guys, there is not salvation in any other. It's interesting. And you see, and depending on the translation in verse 12, the New King James says, nor is there salvation in any other. I think New American Standard say no other at the beginning there, that there is no other, no one else. And then the New King James says, for there is no other name. In the beginning it says, nor is there salvation in any other. And then it says, for there is no other name. And we almost think that's being redundant. Because in our mind he's saying, there's not any other name that can save you. And then he says, there's no other name that can save you. But it's actually two different Greek phrases where he's saying in the first place that there is no one else like him who can save you. If you want to put somebody else in the same category as him, there's no one else like him that can save you. And then the second one he says, and there's no one unlike him that can save you. He's taken all their ammunition away. It doesn't matter if you're going to put up somebody that's not like him, or if you're going to try to say, oh, well, there's Muhammad, he's a prophet too, and the Bible says there's nobody else even like him who can save you. He's the only one. He's the only one who's got that right. He's the only one who's got that power. And it's through His Word. It's through His Word by which we learn how we are to be saved. Here in this one verse, on your handout, I think it's number 2, God condemns all religious groups, churches, doctrines, practices that do not conform to His Son. Because there's not salvation in anything else. There's only salvation found through Christ. And isn't that what Jesus said? He said, I am the way. There's no other options to be found here. Okay, come back to verse 13, front of your page. In verse 13, after Peter has just nailed these guys to the wall in his response, it doesn't say this, but it almost seems like these guys are speechless. I know it says down in, is it verse 14, where it says they could say nothing against it. I don't know that that's really saying that they were speechless, but it's almost as if these guys are like stumbling around looking for a response. We just got nailed. What are we going to say? Now when they saw the boldness, they saw, and that's not just a one-time thing, that's a continual present tense verb. Now when they kept seeing the boldness of Peter and John, and they perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men. How would they know that? They're fishermen. That's what it says, Dave. Sorry. They're fishermen, untrained, uneducated, but they perceived them to be uneducated. You think when Peter stood up to preach that he sounded like Joel Osteen? Is that the picture you've got of Peter? Nice, flowing, beautiful, eloquent speech. Is that the picture you got of Peter? No. Peter stands. Can you imagine rough old Peter having that sweet, kind, pleasant voice? No. You know the kind of voice that's coming out of him. They perceived that they're uneducated. They're not formally trained rabbis like, you know, they should be. And they marveled. They're in constant shock. They realized they weren't trained as rabbis, but where have they been? They realized they have been with Jesus. We rarely have time to look at the personal application down at the bottom of the back of the page, but do you think people would recognize that we've been with Jesus when we're around them, when we're talking? Would somebody say, wow, that person's different. They must be with Jesus. They must be a follower of Jesus. The only explanation they had for why these guys were different was it's that Jesus guy they've been with. Verse 14. And seeing the man who had been healed standing with them, they could say nothing against it. Duh. There's a guy standing there who's been healed. What are you going to say? Well, he wasn't really healed. You can't say anything. Verse 15, but when they had commanded them to go outside of the council, they talked amongst themselves, they conferred among themselves, and here's what they're saying. We saw this in verse 16. What are we going to do? We're in trouble. What shall we do to these men? For indeed that a notable miracle has been done through them is evident to all. There's not a single thing that we can do. Look down in verse 21 for a second. The end, don't ring the bell. At the end of verse 21, I'm going to find a verse against ringing the bell. At the end of verse 21, they said, they let them go, finding no way of punishing them because of the people, since all of the people glorified God for what was done. All of the people are glorifying God in verse 21. All of the people who dwell back in verse 16 in Jerusalem, they knew that a miracle had been done, and so the council said, we can't deny it. I mean, we're not completely stupid. We just can't say that it hasn't been done. Verse 17, here's their brilliant plan. So that it spreads no further. Yeah, this is going to work. So that it spreads no further among the people, let us severely, not just threaten them, but severely threaten them that from now on they speak to no man, notice the emphasis, in this name. No more preaching. So they called them, commanded them not to speak at all nor teach in the name of Jesus. Severely threatened them, don't speak to any man. Verse 18, they commanded them not to do it. You look at what's happening. And the Sanhedrin seems almost desperate. And their last resort is just intimidation. They can't deny that a miracle's been done, so now they're going to try to intimidate. How does intimidation usually turn out? Depends on who you're intimidating, right? Did you ever try to intimidate your kids? It worked when they were little, this big, right? Well, for some of you. It worked when they were this big, right? When your kids got big enough to look you in the eye, how'd the intimidation thing work? Depends on who had the keys, who was holding the keys to the car, right? Maybe it would work. How's intimidation going to work with Peter and John? Is that going to be effective? Look on the back of your sheet. We're skip through this. Just write undebatable. Undebatable about miracles. These guys kept saying, there's no way we can deny this. This miracle, letter D on the back of your page, it's undebatable. Write that in your blank because we got to get back to the front of your page. I know, it's too quick. Letter D on the back is undebatable. Now come back to verse 19. Look at what Peter says. Are Peter and John scared? They answered them and said, well, guys, if you think it's right, by the way, it's in the sight of God. If you think it's right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you guys go and talk about that. You go figure that out. You go and judge that, appealing to their consciences. You really think we ought to listen to you rather than listen to God? For we, verse 20, here's another verse to memorize. For we cannot but speak. New American Standard says we cannot stop. You're telling us to stop. Sorry, we can't do it. We cannot stop speaking the things which we have seen and heard. Well, okay, then we'll just further threaten you in verse 21. Further threaten them, they let them go. What could they possibly do to these men to get them to stop preaching the gospel? There wasn't anything that they could do to get these men to stop preaching the gospel. What is our society going to be able to do to us to get us to stop preaching the gospel? Is it already working on us? Have we stopped because it's not popular? Have we stopped because some people don't want to hear it? Here they are, commanded not to say anything. This is one of the greatest prayers in all of the Bible. They go back and they tell the apostles what's happening. All the apostles got together and, in my imagination, got down on their knees and they pray unto God and they say to God, God, we're so scared. Would you get us out of this situation? That's not what they said. They didn't say they were scared. They didn't pray for God to get them out of there. They weren't like in a foxhole saying, God, if you'll get me out of this, I'll serve you. No, it wasn't any deal with God. It wasn't anything like that. It wasn't, God, will you just do a zapper on these guys, God? Just zap them real quick so we don't have to deal with them. Is that what they prayed? No, the only two things they asked for are over in verse 29. They only asked for two things. Number one, God, would you look on their threats? Just lay them out there, God. We know you see their threats. Look on their threats. And then number two, grant unto us what? Safety? Grant unto us what? Boldness. Grant unto us boldness that we would go and speak for you. Verse 31 says that the place where they were assembled began to shake. There was some kind of a earthquake that God caused as an obvious answer to their petitions. The prayer that they prayed is one that we ought to emulate in so many different ways. It was a prayer that honestly turned to God and said, God, we want to do what you want us to do. Please help us. And that ought to be our prayer to God. God, we want to do what you want us to do. Please help us. Not fearful, but with determination. Randy? But boldness, don't confuse boldness with rudeness or haughtiness. Difference. Boldness is courage to stand up for truth. And they would not back down from that. And Brandy's right. It's something that we need to pray for. It's something we need to have. And a lot of you have it. Some of you are posting stuff on your Facebook pages that may be losing friends. But it's gaining you friends too. Is there anybody more important being friends with than being a friend of God? It's about time for us, if we're not already, to make sure we're standing up for truth and for righteousness. The end of this chapter is great too, but we'll look at chapter 5 next week. Make sure you read up and you're ready for it. Thanks so much for your attention and for the extra minute.